Radio MAC protocol and congestion control, and one question is how to solve this problem. And I think we're going to hear from different speakers their kind of answers or interpretations of the problem. And I think Sean is going to talk about this particular approach to actually address this.
Right, indeed. Yes, so thank you. So the talk by Ed is a perfect introduction for mine. First, because it shows that there are indeed some networks that do multi-open wireless, and sometimes you wonder if all this work is not just confined to the academic world, but indeed there are such networks, so that's one good point. The other point that he made is that there is that complicated interaction of time between different control loops in the network, so between the router and the TCP, for example, and that's a very serious problem. And finally, one concrete technical point that he made is that by controlling the aggressiveness of the MAC protocol, you can try to correct the unfairness. And this will be one of the themes of this paper. How do you do this in a systematic way? Now, we have taken the liberty of forgetting about TCP, so having a clean slate approach, right? So we don't try to solve this bistability or those winner-take-all type properties of TCP, so we avoid TCP. And similarly, we will not use the traditional exponential backoff of CSMA. So we'll use CSMA, but not in the traditional way. So this is work by Libin Zhang. Libin is there. Maybe you should stand up so that you can all meet Libin. All right. And he asked me to present the talk. I made a few slides. He made most of the slides. My contribution to the paper is to draw some slides, a few of them. Okay, so let's see. Oops, this is going too fast or too slow. So the background, there's a lot of work on cross-layer optimization, meaning trying to do joint MAC layer or scheduling and congestion control, transport layer. So how do you do this jointly? So how do you control the arrival rates by TCP, for example, and how do you schedule the packets that are in the network? And this is done typically by the MAC protocol. And it has been known, and Ed again stressed that point, that the scheduling, the MAC layer, is the bottleneck. If the MAC layer is very unfair, then TCP only aggravates the problem. If you have a very unfair MAC protocol, it's hard to make a fair transport protocol. So there are a number of papers that have pointed that out. So how do you do a good scheduling? So there's been some very good work that we understand well now, I think, that one way to achieve maximum throughput in a network is to do maximum weight scheduling. So, for example, if you want to transmit as fast as you can to the nodes, then you try at any given time to find the maximum independent set with the maximum sum of the queue lengths that you can serve. And then you go, right? The problem is that it's of course very hard to find the independent sets in the first place. And it's even harder to compare their weights, the sum of the queue lengths of the independent sets. So that's very hard. So one approach is to do randomized algorithms where you don't try to find really the maximum independent set, but you create an independent set, and then the next time around, you look for another one at random, and you compare that the weight of that new independent set with the one that you were using. If the one that you were using is better than the one that you picked randomly, keep the old one. If the new one is better, try the new one. And if you do that, then in the long term, you achieve maximum throughput. So that's very nice. But still, you have the problem of finding the independent set and finding its weight. Right. Now, if you try to do something simpler, something greedy, like E2.11, then it has been shown that you achieve only a small fraction of the throughput, the maximum throughput that is theoretically possible with maximum weight scheduling. And we have looked at some of those papers, and we have done some work also to try to understand under which cases a greedy scheduling might be optimal, might achieve the maximum throughput. So you're talking about the work with DIMA cases along those lines. And there are sufficient conditions under which you can show that it works. There are local pooling conditions, they're a bit tricky, but and difficult to check for a general network. So in this paper, what we propose is a distributed algorithm for maximum throughput. It uses only local information, the queue length. So each node knows its queue length. There's minimum control messages, as you will see. It's based on CSMA, random access. So in principle, okay, so this is the advertising slide, right? The time is not divided into synchronous slots, so the packet lengths are random and so on. And then we do joint scheduling and rate control, and we combine everything with end-to-end control to achieve optimum utility and fairness. So you get everything. Right? But of course, something has to give, and what has to give is that, well, we idealize a little bit what is happening in the protocol, as you will see. All right, so there is related work that has tried to address this problem by looking at particular models of conflict graphs. And so some of the authors are in the room. So typically, they assume particular models of conflicts, like node exclusive or two-hop interference, or they use another model of interference, like CDMA, instead of collision models. And sometimes there's some work also on time-varying wireless channels. Right. So I will try to give you an overview of the paper, of the ideas, at a high level. And then, as time permits, I will go into some details. But first, let's try to understand what the setup is, what the assumptions are, and what the result is. Okay. So this is a typical picture. So it's supposed to represent nodes and wireless nodes, and then when some nodes can communicate, we have a link. Right? So there is a link between the left node and the top right node. There is a queue corresponding to that link, and the queue length is QK. And the links have conflicts. And we assume that if you use CSMA, you will be able to sense a node that is transmitting and that conflicts with you. Right, so it's an idealized assumption that if one node conflicts with you, and you can sense it, right, and then you will refrain from sending if your backup delay is bigger than the other node. Right? So if one node starts and you have not started transmitting, you will not transmit. It's idealized because it takes some time, right? So there could still be collision. So we forget about that, right? So that's part of the simplification. So the links, there are K links, there is a conflict graph, arbitrary conflict graph, corresponding to which there are independent sets. So XI will be a vector of indicators of the links that can transmit at the same time if they belong to an independent set. Right? For example, the empty set is an independent set in our notation. So we are not looking at only maximal independent sets, we are looking at all independent sets. And they are determined by the conflict graph. All right. OK, so we have independent sets, xi in 0, 1, k. And there are, I will assume that we look at one hop flows for the time being. Later, we'll look at flows that go through the network. But initially, we have one hop flows, meaning that there is a rate of flow for link k. They arrive at the transmitter of link K, and they leave at the receiver of link K. Right? So simple one-up. And you try to do maximum scheduling. We have a rate of flows that arrive, and the rate is a vector of rates, lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda K, and we want them to be strictly feasible. So what does this mean? Well, it means that the rate, the vector of rates, can be written as a convex combination of the independent vectors. Right, the independent set vectors. And this should be positive. So all the weights should be positive and add up one. So in particular, the empty set has a positive weight. So you are clearly in the interior of the feasible set. Right? And you could be as close as you want to the boundary, but you cannot be on the boundary. So it's a strictly feasible vector of rate. Okay? So for each link, there are flows coming in. And you want to be able to keep up with those feasible rates using some distributed scheduling, and you don't know what the independent sets are, so how do you do it? All right, so this is tired. Did not sleep well last night. Probably the battery is bad. Okay. So this is a story again, right? The vector lambda, independent sets, and the algorithm is CSMA. What does it mean? Well, each link, or each transmitter of each link, will have an exponential backoff. And the exponential in the sense that there is an exponential delay that you wait before you try to transmit. It's not exponential in the sense that it doubles every time you fail, right? It's an exponential delay, a random time that you pick, and the rate of this exponential time is itself exponential in RK, just a way of parametrizing those delays. So the mean time that you wait is 1 over the exponential of RK. So RK is just a parameter to label somehow the waiting time of link K. And the different nodes wait random time. Right? And the first one to, well, the smallest waiting time will start transmitting. The others that would interfere with it will not transmit, but some other one that is in the independent set may try, and so on, right? Okay. It's a little backup. Okay. Now, if you choose those rates, so those exponential delays, then you will find some distribution for the independent sets being activated. Now, what is the model here? The model is that when you transmit a packet, the packet has an exponential length so that you can make a Markov chain. So whenever I transmit a packet, the packet has an exponential transmission time. For simplicity, we'll assume that it's a mean one, but we can extend that. That's not a problem. Right? So imagine that at some point, so initially nobody transmits. Then one, after an exponential time, one node starts transmitting, right? So now I am in a new independent set that contains only that link. Then a little bit later, maybe another link starts transmitting before the first one is finished. So now I'm in an independent set with two links, right? Then one link transmission may complete. I'm in a new independent set and so on. So you have a Markov chain of independent sets, corresponding to which there is some stationary distribution. Right? And in particular, there is the probability Pi that independent set I, which is a set of links, is currently transmitting. And to that stationary distribution, so corresponds to a fraction of time that the links are transmitting, and therefore a service rate for all the queues. So mu k will be the rate at which qk is getting served under the rates r. Now, you would have to be very lucky for the rate R to be such that the mu's are bigger than the lambdas, right? So if you want to be able to sustain the lambdas, you have to choose a rate R. How do you do it? So we have exponential transmission time. The problem, how do I choose the rate R? So the aggressiveness of the nodes, so that I can keep up with the rate. Solution is this. I minimize some Kullback-Lieber distance between P bar and P of R. So P of R is the stationary distribution of my Markov chain corresponding to R. P bar defines the rate lambda. So somehow I'm trying to make the fraction of time that I'm using the independent set as close as possible as the ones that satisfy lambda, right? So I'm trying to approach that. How do I do that? Remarkably, if you do a gradient algorithm for this problem, for this minimization problem, you end up with a distributed problem. So that rate at time t plus 1 would be the rate at time t plus a constant times the difference between the arrival rate of the queue and the service rate of the queue that you have observed in the last epoch. So in other words, the rate RK, which the aggressiveness of node K, should be proportional to the queue length of K. All right. But remember that the rate at which you transmit is exponential in RK. So this is the right parametrization. the rate at which you choose your exponential time should be exponential in the queue length. All right. Now, an interesting fact that we will need later to look at the flows through the network instead of just one-off flows is that this particular choice of R also maximizes the entropy of the distribution of the independent sets, subject to the constraint that the service rate of QK should be larger than lambda K. So if you try to maximize the entropy of those independent sets, subject to this constraint, you should choose the same rate R. Right? So it's a bit remarkable that this makes the independent sets the most random possible, subject to this constraint. Right, so in other words, if you wanted to find R, you could try to solve this problem. Let's try to maximize this entropy subject to this constraint. That leads to the next idea, which is now we look at multi-hop flows. So the goal is so we have a flow Fm, the rate of the flow Fm, along some path M in the network, with Fm. Corresponding to this flow, there is some utility, Vm of Fm. And what we would like to do is maximize the social utility, right? Okay, so how can I do that? Well, the idea would be to adjust the flows, Fm, and to adjust the scheduling to keep up with the flows. So how do we do that? Well, this is a strategy that we understand already from previous work, that what we should do is maximize H of U plus the utility subject to the mu's being bigger than lambda. So the intuition is that when I try to maximize this sum, I'm maximizing the social welfare of the users. And when I'm maximizing this, I'm choosing the rate R to be able to keep up with those flows. Right? The lambda k's will correspond to the flows Fm, right? So if I know the rate Fm of the flows, there are some corresponding rates for the links lambda k, and then I try to satisfy this constraint. All right. What happens when I try to solve this problem? Well, again, we get a distributed solution. So if you look at the distributed solution of the problem, the rate rk that before for the one-off flows was just proportional to the Q length is now proportional to the maximum back pressure at link K. So what does it mean? Well, let's say that link K only transmits to one other node, right? In that case, the back pressure is the difference of the Q length between the sender and the receiver. So instead of looking at the Q length QK, I should look at the difference QK minus QJ, J, right? This will be the rate of my aggressiveness. And then the FM, how do I control the FM? Well, this is the usual input rate control that we have seen before in the paper by Modiano and Mike Neely and so on. So what is quite magical, Sama, is that this formulation leads to a decomposition of the problem. Now you could say, how do I know the back pressure? Well, maybe when node K transmits in this packet, it will indicate its Q length. When the next node, the neighbor, transmits, it will also indicate its Q length. And by watching these, they can watch the back pressure. Right? So you don't have to add explicit control messages in order to implement the algorithm. That's what we say by saying that it is minimum control messages. It's a little header saying what is my Q length when you transmit. So that's the idea, right? So it combines the MAC protocol with the flow control. The flow control is some input throttling based on the Q length of the first Q. When the Q length of the first Q of the path M becomes too large, I stop transmitting. And then the MAC protocol is CSMA with some aggressiveness that is exponential in the back pressure of the link. All right. It seems too good to be true, right? Okay. All right, so let me try to explain this. Okay, so back to the one-off flow case, and we said that the rate should be chosen so that the probability pi leads to a rate mu k bigger than lambda k. Right, so this is an example, a concrete example of this situation, right, to make sure that we really understand. So these are two links to explain the Markov chain model behind this story, right, to explain how the rates result in some distribution of the independent sets and therefore in the service rates. This is a simple example of that story. These are two links, one and two, that conflict. So the independent sets are 0, 0, meaning that nobody transmits. 1, 0, link 1 transmits. 0, 1 means that only link 2 transmits. And you see that the transition rates, right? R1 is the exponential of little r1, right? So with this rate, link 1 will start transmitting, and then 2 will refrain until link 1 is done, right? And then maybe link 2 will transmit, okay? So this is the Markov chain model. And for this one, you can easily calculate the steady state distribution, right, of those three states. And therefore, that tells you the rate at which link 1 is being served, the rate at which link 2 is being served. And you see that if you knew lambda 1 and lambda 2, you could choose R so that lambda 1 plus lambda 2 is less than 1, strictly. You could choose R1 and R2 so that this is bigger than lambda 1 and that is bigger than lambda 2, right? And the point is that, is this still working? It's fading, right? Maybe the battery is dead too. Is that possible? Hello, hello? You stop? Okay, we keep on going. I'll try to speak a little bit more loudly. All right, so now what is that if you have an arbitrary topology, an arbitrary conflict graph, and you do a similar exponential backoff and then exponential service times, then you can compute explicitly the steady state distribution. And this is how it looks. So essentially this set Xi is active, is proportional to the product of the exponential of the rates at which you serve those links, right? And intuitively, okay, if you are serving those links aggressively, then they are likely to be active together. And you can show that, well, the way you prove that is you think that if the links were independent without the conflict graph, you would get a symmetric Markov chain, right? It would be symmetric because they are all independent. And this is this Markov chain restricted to the collection of independent sets, right? And therefore, you renormalize and you get the same distribution as we have seen from a long time ago, right? And in fact, remarkably also, the set of links that are active forms a Markov field, which is quite cute. So if you know the state of the links that are conflicting with you, then your state is independent of the other links. It has a very nice property, and this is probably this Markov property of the field that explains why you have local control that works. All right, so this is the rate. This is the same as mu k, right? The mu k just adds up the probabilities that link k is being served. All right. Okay, so this is the distance in your p bar that you achieve with the particular aggressiveness vector r. So p bar defines the lambdas, and PR is the steady state distribution that you get. And you can show that if you solve, right, if lambda is feasible, strictly feasible, and if you maximize this f of r, then you will find that the lambda will be less than the mu, so that you'll be able indeed to keep up with those rates, right? So the trick then is to maximize this or minimize this distance between the two distributions. Tells us that this is how we should choose. We should minimize the distance, and then it will be feasible, right? And then the gradient algorithm is just solving this problem as a gradient algorithm, right? The gradient algorithm, and remarkably, the derivative is just a function of the difference between the arrival rate and the service rate of the queue, and therefore it says that your aggressiveness should be proportional to the queue length. So things like that. Very nicely. So two magical things happen. First, it is that the steady-state distribution of those independent sets is tractable, computable. Right? The second one is the gradient algorithm happens to be distributed. So things are very nice. Okay. Now you can show that this also maximizes this entropy subject to the constraints, and the way you do that, I don't know, yes. If you do it, right, if you try to do that, and you take a Lagrange multiplier for every constraint, and then you write the solution, you will find that it's exactly the same solution. All right. Okay. So I will skip this slide probably in the interest of, in your interest and in my interest. Okay. Okay. In the multi-op case, the story is similar. Okay. So what we say then, the trick is to maximize H of U. So this means that we should choose the aggressiveness of the queues so that the distribution of the independent set maximizes the entropy. And then plus the sum of the utility functions of the vectors, of the rays. Yes?
Are you saying that the two problems are equivalent, or do you say that solving one implying the solution? Is this something
about that when you try to solve this maximization problem, you are trying to make this large and this large intuitively. Right? Yes, 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 yes. I'm saying this is the solution. Okay, now, a little caveat, right? Like Mike Neely explained this morning, if you put a little weight here, a weight alpha, that is large enough, when you maximize this sum, you will try to make the utility large. And this entropy will be bounded, so that when your weight comes, you are in fact approaching maximum utility. If your weight is smaller, you have a trade-off, right? You are not quite achieving the maximum, but you can get as close as you want to achieving the maximum utility of the users, right? So if I choose, so I should put an alpha here, a large alpha, and if I solve this problem, then essentially I'm maximizing the sum of the utilities.
What is being gained by doing that?
What is being gained by doing that is that jointly I will find the MAC scheduling, so the aggressiveness of the nodes, and the flow control output of the nodes. So it's a cross-layer story, right? This says, oh, your MAC should be feasible somehow. Because we know that if we solve, maximize this H of U subject to those constraints, you will find service rates of the queues that are feasible. Right? And you find the optimum rates. The aggressiveness will be able to keep up with the rates. And at the same time, when you maximize this, you will do the flow control at the input of the network. It's one. So, as I said, right, if you choose one, you will probably be off. Right? This term might be too big compared to that. So maybe you should choose a bigger alpha. And as alpha becomes large, you get arbitrarily close to the optimum of this, right? And while still keeping the.
Can you lose feasibility?
Can you lose feasibility if alpha is too large?
Yeah.
Okay, no. Libin says no. Is there a simple argument for why it cannot happen?
Because that's in the constraint, right?
Yeah, in any case, right, yeah. In any case, we do a constraint optimization, right? That's true. It has to be constrained. Not if the lambda, the rates, no, the rate, there is always a feasible solution because you do flow control, right? At the input of the network, right? Yeah. The lambda is determined by the flows, right?
Or increase alpha, let's say you have an alpha,
yes.
Increase, you become closer and closer to the optimum.
Yes.
Are you losing something, or are you just...
Keeping in the feasible region, you are keeping UK even lambda k.
But
yes.
Is there a disadvantage of choosing alpha very, very large, or is it
large queues and large delays? That's right.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes. That's right. Your service rate will get closer and closer to the arrival, right? Yeah. Okay. So this is a story. So let me in the interest of time, go to some simple examples, right? So this is an example that shows when you do up scheduling. So again, this is a simulation that assumes perfect CSMA in the sense that if the two backoff times are very close to each other, there is a winner, right? And the other one stops. So, but it shows that you keep up, the queue lengths are bounded. So you keep up with the rates, and the rates here are at 99% of the feasible rates, right? So if this were a factor one, this would be on the boundary feasible rates. So you are just 1% away, and you are able to keep up finite queues. So it shows that the algorithm will select the rate, the aggressiveness of the nodes, to keep up with the flows, right, in the one-off case.
Packets or in an
ID manner? Yes. It's like Bernoulli arrival. So at each step you receive a packet with some probability that is given here, right? And it's IID. Yeah.
But what happens if you drop that? If there's, for example, memory in these streams, does that matter?
It does not matter, because the what matters is that the service rate keeps up with your arrival rate, right? So if you have ergodic arrivals, the same thing will happen. Okay.
This is related to Birkhoff's von Neumann.
Oh, it just says that your rates, so you look at the independent cells, right?
Right.
And you write a convex combination of those maximum independent cells. Right.
But is that related to that Birkhoff's
von Neumann network? I guess in a switch network? Yes. Yeah, certainly. Those are maximum independent cells, right? And you know that you have to be in the convex cell, but you want to be strictly inside, right? Okay, now here the queue lengths are fairly big, so the idea is that maybe we can add a penalty to the queue lengths to try to make them smaller. And the idea of Leibniz is to add some penalty, so you want the service rate to be strictly bigger than the arrival rate. So there are some WKs that are positive, it could be a slack, right? And then you try to maximize entropy plus some combination of those slack vectors. So you try to make the slack as large as possible. You have a trade-off between being stable and then having small queues. And then, okay, so we don't know exactly how to choose the C that represents the trade-off, but if you choose some C, you get shorter queues. Right? Now, this is an example where you have flow throughout the network, and it's a model interference where if two links have one node that is one hop away, then they conflict. So that's the model, right? And you have a flow, one flow that goes like this, right? One flow that goes like that, one flow that goes like that. And you choose rates that are you don't choose rates that are feasible. You have a utility function that is logarithmic, so you want to maximize the product of the rates. And beta, what is beta? Ah, so this is what I called alpha before. So this is how you weigh, this is what I call alpha, how you weigh the utility compared to the entropy. So you do that, and boom, that's what you get, and you get stable, and you get to a limit where the flows are very close to the optimum rates. So the optimum rates are here, as you solve offline, right? You can find the optimum rates, and you see that this approaches the optimum rates. All right, so to summarize, we have looked at an adaptive CSMA algorithm that achieves maximum throughput, it's distributed, it's synchronous, it works for a general interference model, it does joint scheduling and rate control, and then the future work is what is the step size for these gradient algorithms, what is the conversion speed, what is the effect of the imperfections of the actual system, right? The fact that you have collisions, that you have hidden terminal problems that we did not model here. So in practice, if you try to apply this algorithm, will it work well or not? We don't know, right, to be honest. Maybe this will never fly, right? But on paper, it looks good. On simulations, it looks good. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.